Perek Revi Halacha Aleph. Ein melamdin divrei Torah. One does not teach words of Torah. Ela l'talmid hagun, only to an appropriate student, noe b'maisof, whose actions are befitting. Literally, who is attractive in his actions. The Rambam uses here two expressions. Talmid hagun, noe b'maisof. So in the Shalos HaTshuvos Yachal Yisrael, he explains, Hagun is referring to his internal state. Internally, he is a fine human being, a moral human being, an upright, upstanding human being. Noah B'Maisav is talking about his external behavior, which is a manifestation of his inner character. Such a student you teach Torah to. Oyla Tam. Tam, the Kesef Mishnah says, what does Tam mean? Tam means wholesome, Tam means innocent, Tam means simple. Latam means a student whose behavior is unknown. We're not sure. They translated here in English, a person whose behavior is unknown. He's a Tam. But if the teacher knew that the student is following an inappropriate path, he's going in the wrong direction, so then what do you do? What do you do? So the Rambam says, this is what you do. These words are very powerful. The first thing you have to do is help this child, help this student. Bring him back to the path of goodness. And help him start living according to a righteous, a good, a correct path. And then you examine him. You scrutinize what's going on. You scrutinize him. And then you bring him into the Beis Medrash and you teach him Torah. Amru Chachamim, our sages said, the Gemara in Chulin Kuf Lamed Gimel, kol ashoyne l'talmid sheinei hagun, kilu zorak even l'markulis. Somebody who teaches a Talmud, a student, who is living an inappropriate lifestyle, it's like casting a stone to Markulis. This teacher is considered as though he throws a stone to Markulis. Markulis is Mercury. Mercury was a Roman god. It was the Roman god of wayfarers. And the symbol of this Roman deity was three stones positioned in the form of a triangle. And how did you worship the Markulis? How did you worship Mercury? You worshiped it by throwing stones at that symbol. So the Chachamim are saying that somebody who teaches Torah to a student who is morally impoverished and lives in an inappropriate, immoral fashion, it's like this teacher is casting a stone to Mercury, which is the way of worshiping it. And this metaphor is very precise. This is explained by the Prisha in Yeridei Siman Reish Mem Vav and the Levush. And they explain, I may be throwing a stone to the Markulis, to the Mercury, because I'm trying to embarrass it. I'm trying to denigrate it. I'm like throwing rocks at it. You know, when you throw rocks at somebody because you're trying to put them down. But essentially, unintentionally, I'm actually building up Mercury. I am worshiping it, even though that's not my intention. The teacher may have very good intentions, but if the student, unfortunately, is rotten, so the very Torah that you're teaching him may be used by him in a manipulative fashion and may actually cause him to become much worse and to be able to influence other people badly. So I may have very good intentions because I'm trying to teach a student Torah. But if this student is really inappropriate, he shouldn't be in the Beis Medrash, and therefore it's like throwing a stone at Lamar Kulis. Shenemar, we have a pasuk for this in Mishlei Chavav. Kitzroid Evan, b'margei makein noisin l'ksil kavod. As one who winds a stone in a sling, so is he who gives honor to a fool. What's the connection? So the Rambam says, v'ein kavod ela Torah. True honor, there's no honor in the world other than Torah. Shenemar, the pasuk says, in Mishlei, Perek Gimel, kavod chachamim yinchalo. The wise shall inherit honor. Chachamim inherit kavod. What honor do they inherit? The real honor, which is Torah. So this, the pasuk is saying, that when somebody gives a ksil kavod, when somebody gives honor, Torah, to a fool, somebody who's not ready to receive it, so then it's kitzroir evan b'margeima. It's like one who winds a stone in a sling, representing the metaphor of the way they worshipped Mercury. And the Rambam continues, this is in terms of the student. Now let's speak about the teacher who behaves in an inappropriate fashion. Where did the Rambam get this? So there's a Gemara in Maseches Brachos Daf Chav Ches that speaks about a fascinating debate that existed in Jewish history. It still exists between Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel was the head of the Sanhedrin, and he had a philosophy, a policy. Kol Talmud Shein Toichi Kabar Lo Yikonas Lo Beis HaMedrash. A student whose inside is not like his outside, meaning he's not morally perfect on the inside and on the outside, Toichi is not Kabara, he shouldn't go into the Beis HaMedrash. If he's a faker, we don't take him in. And he had a guard by the door. The guard did not let anybody in. I guess you had to come with some certificate that they examined you, and they said, you're the real thing, and then they let you in. Rabbi Gamliel was dethroned. And the new leader of the Sanhedrin became Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. He was only 18 years old at the time. He was a very young man. But he became the new leader of the Sanhedrin. The whole story, brachas, chav zayin, chav ches. And he immediately removed the guard from the door. Silku l'shem rapes. And that day the Beis Medrash filled up with 400 students, 800 students, to the point that Rabbi Gamliel started to feel bad. He started to feel horrible because he felt that perhaps he prevented Torah from all of these students. So there was an argument here. And in parentheses, the Chiddushei Harim asks a gewaldic question. Why was Rabbi Gamliel upset? Didn't he know that if he removes the guard, there'll be another few hundred people? Like, what shocked him? I mean, this was your policy all your years. You really thought that the guard is just there in vain? The guard is there and nobody's coming in, besides those who got a special permission to get in. So now Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah removed the guard. Of course the place is packed. Like, Rabbi Gamliel, what happened? And the Chiddushei Harim says, he says something very interesting. He says, Rabbi Gamliel realized that all those students who were sitting on the fence, all those students who never got permission to get in, he saw what the environment did for them. He saw that by allowing them into the Beis Medrash, they became transformed. And this is what perturbed him so much that perhaps he made an error. Who is the Rambam paskening here? Like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Because the Rambam says, Talmud Hagun Noah b'maisav, and you can hear in his words, Toichai Baroi, Hagun is Toichai Noah b'maisav is Baroi. The instant answer, Oyla Tam. What's Tam? Tam is somebody you don't know. You don't know. You don't need a guard by the door and say, where, we have to first examine you and scrutinize you and put you through the crucible and the test, and then maybe we'll let you in. No. If you don't know, you let him in. If you know for sure that this is a student who unfortunately is going to use the Torah in a wrong way, then you are not allowed to teach him until, first thing is you have to try and help him do tshuva and bring him to the right path. And then, if he's appropriate, bring him into the Beis Medrash. And if not, the Rambam says, you should not teach him. I should add that I mentioned in yesterday's shiur, one of the extraordinary commentators on Rambam Hilchas Talmud Torah is Shulchan Aruch HaRav Hilchas Talmud Torah. And over there he discusses this Rambam, and he says, this is a halacha about the teacher, but the student should try to push himself in. Even if a student knows that he's not ready to change, but he wants to learn, go push yourself in. He says, this is a halacha for the teacher, but the student should try to push himself in. And then the Shulchan Aruch HaRav says, and maybe even the teacher should take him. Why? Because even though the Rambam says first, you have to make sure that he does tshuva, he says that's what you try. You try to do that. And what if it doesn't work? What if it completely doesn't work? So he says it's possible that even the teacher, there's a svara, he says it's possible. Shulchan Aruch HaRav, Hilchas Talmud Torah, Peidik Dalad. He says, Even if the teacher should not put himself into a doubt, because he may not do tshuva. And if he doesn't do tshuva, so he's Zoyrik Evel Markulis. So it's like you're throwing stones to Mercury. So he says, that's true. But the student should push himself in my absence. What is he going to lose? And if he's Zoyrik, he'll do tshuva. And then the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, this is Kuntris Achren, Hilchas Talmud Torah, Peidik Dalet. V'gam HaRav, Yesh Loimah, D'Torich Lachas, Atzmeh, L'Beis HaSavik, Yav Shabin Yanachem. Maybe it's possible that halachically, even the Rav has to put himself in doubt. What's the doubt? The doubt is, if he does tshuva, gevaldik, awesome. It's not Zerik Heaven Markulis. It's helping a Jewish kid. But the suffix is, he may not do tshuva. You're taking in a rotten potato who remains rotten. He says, if there's no other possibility, maybe halachically you have to. Elim, efshalach, zirat chila lamutavai, dezit shalayach, nesulu beisamadish, maitchemayset chila. So then why does the Rambam say, put him through this examination? So the Shulchan Aruch Rav says, if you know that you could bring him back to goodness by first not letting him into the Beis Medrash, and that pushing him away, that rejection, is going to trigger within him a yearning, a thirst, and an eagerness to transform himself, then matchimoy setchila. Then indeed, you have to say, you have to stay out. Until you do tshuva, then we take you in. But what if you know that rejection just keeps him out of the Beis Medrash forever? So the Shulchan Aruch HaRav says, maybe the halacha would be that then, if there's no other choice, even the Rav has to take him in. Ala Sofik, Maybe you're going to be throwing an Evan to Markulis if he doesn't do tshuva. He'll just use the Torah in a toxic way. Like the Gemara says in Yuma, Ayin Beis and Tainas Dav Zayin, the Torah can become Sama Mavis. It can be used in a poisonous way. But maybe the Torah will transform him. The Torah will the learning and being in this environment will completely transform him. What's his proof? He says it's a Beferish Gemara. Teda, Beferish and Shechnar Charav. Which Gemara? Saita. Saita daf mem zayin amad aleph. Many of the prints have deleted some of the lines over there. Yeshua ben Prachya had a student. His name was Yeshu. Yeshu once spoke about women. Yeshua ben Prachya threw him out of the Beis Medrash. He came back a few times. Yeshua ben Prachya felt he's insincere. And he kept on pushing him away, pushing him away, pushing him away. One day he came during Krishna. Yeshua ben Prachya wanted he should come back. He understood it as ultimate rejection. And he went and he worshipped idolatry. Yeshu. What does the Gemara learn from there? The Gemara says, don't do like Yeshua ben Prachya. What did Yeshua ben Prachya do wrong? He did the right thing. Here's a Talmud. Unless you are absolutely certain that he did tshuva, don't let him into the Beis Medrash. Throw him out. The Gemara says there was something wrong. Why? Because if you're not sure that the rejection is going to bring him back, is going to help him do tshuva, then bring him in. Allah sofik, that you'll help him do tshuva. And that's what he paskins la halacha in Hilchas Talmud Torah Pedek Dalet Halacha Yizayin. He says, don't teach Torah to a Talmud who lives inappropriately. First bring him to do tshuva and then bring him into the Beis Medrash. That's the Rambam. And then he says, but if you can't and he wants to come learn, he wants to come learn, even though he didn't do tshuva, he just wants to come learn. So you should say, nah, this is evil, this is horrible. So the Balatanya paskins, tehei smol doicha, v'yemin mekarevis, not like Yeshua ben Prachya, shadocha l'ploini bish, shtei yadayim. Wow. I should just say, there's a Rambam in Hilchis Ritzayach in the beginning of Perek Zayin, that from the Rambam also, there's the mashmos, this part. So you could see that this is also Shittas HaRambam. He speaks about Talmud Shegola, Maglin Rabbi Imai, a Talmud who killed somebody by mistake and he goes into exile. You bring the Rebbe into him. From that Rambam, it's not for now, we're going to get there, Mitzvah Shem, I'll say it then. But from there, you can prove from the Rambam, like this Taich in Shulchan Aruch Harav, Hilchas Talmud Torah. Of course, I'm elaborating on this because everybody understands the powerful ramifications of this qualification in our own times. Let's go to the next piece. V'chein harav. What about a teacher? Sheini ha'ilich b'derech toiva. He does not follow the right path. He's a good teacher, maybe brilliant, maybe a great communicator, but he doesn't live what he preaches. Afal p'pisha chacham gadlu. Even he's a great sage of cholam tzrichin lo, and the whole nation needs him. There's no teacher like him. Ein mislamdim imenu asher yachzor l'mutav. You do not learn from him until he does not revert his ways and come back to goodness. Shenemar, the Pasuk says, Malachi Perik Beis, the last prophet. Ki sif sei choyen yishmiru daz v'toyde yivakshu mipiyu ki malach Hashem tzvoyisu. The lips of the Koyen preserve knowledge. Toyde you shall seek from his mouth because he is a malach, an angel or a messenger of Hashem. Amru chachamim, on this the sages said, Ma'it katin yud zayin, im doim arav, l'malach Hashem tzvoyis toyde yivakshu mipiyu, v'im laval yivakshu toyde mipiyu. If the Rav is comparable to a malach Hashem tzvoyis, to an angel, a messenger of Hashem, then seek to learn Torah from his mouth. But if not, do not seek to learn Torah from his mouth. This is the source the Rambam says, if a Rav is not a malach Hashem tzvoyis, even though he may have a lot of wisdom, do not be mevakish Torah mipiyu. Now, what does this mean? A Rav is a malach Hashem tzvoyis. Where are you going to find, maybe once in a while, but where are you going to find a teacher who's a malach Hashem tzvoyis, an angel? Yeah, so a lot has been written on this, but I'll tell you two fascinating interpretations. One comes from the Ponim Yafis, the Baal HaFlor, Pinchas Levi Ish Horowitz, Harav Pinchas Levi Ish Horowitz, the author of Sefer HaMakna, student of the Maggid of Mizrich. The Rav of Frankfurt in Germany, the author of Makna, the author of HaFlor and Ksuvis, HaMakna and Kedushin, the author of Ponim Yafis on Chumash, one of the Ga'ini Hador. And he says that a malach is called in Tanakh Oimeid. He stands in one place, and a neshama moves. This world, you can transform yourself. A malach, the orbit, the spiritual orbit is more or less consistent and permanent and fixed. So he says, if the Rav is like a malach in the sense that he's not teaching in order to enhance his own knowledge and express himself. He's happy to be an oymed. Very often, a teacher needs to teach new material, innovative material, because he's bored of the material and he wants to express himself, but it's not what the student needs to hear. The student needs to hear the material that works for the student. If you're ready to be a malach, you're ready to stay in one place, even though it's not about your growth. But that's what the student needs. That's the teacher you're going to receive from. The Baal Shem Tov says, this is quoted in Degel Machane Ephraim Parshas Yisroi. The Baal Shem Tov says a wonderful interpretation. He says, a malach is called an oymed. More or less, he's in one orbit. A malach doesn't experience big nefilas, big downfalls. Yes, everything in the world changes. There's always growth. Remember, goodness is infinite, always growth. But more or less, even when a malach goes to a lower level, it's still pretty much stable. So the Baal Shem Tov says a fascinating idea, quoted by his grandson, the Degel Machane Ephraim. He says, I'm using my own words, every person has a bad day. I don't know, every person. Most people have bad days. Teachers also have bad days, you know? Right, there's a teacher before cholent and after cholent, before the nap and after the nap, before the coffee and after the coffee. The day his wife, it was nice to him, the day his wife, you know, told him what she thinks about it. People have bad days. If it's possible that when I have a bad day, my messages get distorted, you can't learn from me. So my Rav doyma l'malach Hashem tzvayis. Even when the Rav has a nefila, even when he has moments of katnos, even when he has difficult moments, but he still retains a pristine purity not to lose the plot and not to distort the message he teaches, then you could receive Torah from his mouth. Of course, on a most basic level, it means that the Rav must be of sterling, pure character and behavior to receive Torah. And of course, here's, there's a big question, Gemara Maseches Chagiga, Reb Meir is one of the greatest sages, and who's his Rebbe? His Rebbe is Elisha ben Avuya. Elisha ben Avuya is actually a heretic. Elisha ben Avuya leaves the Jewish faith. He's brilliant. He's a Chacham Gadol. Reb Meir learns from this. The Gemara asks. The Gemara asks the question. The Gemara answers. Reb Meir was different. He was a great student. He was a Talmud Gadol. Somebody who's a great student can do it. Everybody says, why doesn't the Rambam put this in? Why doesn't the Rambam put in the Talmud Gadol? And those who say, well, it's uncommon and it's very rare. The Lech HaMishnah says the Rambam put in all halachas. I don't care how uncommon it is. The Divrei Yoel writes, as Satmar Rav says, because today nobody can be such a student and learn from such a teacher. And when Mashiach comes, there won't be such teachers. So therefore, the Rambam didn't put it in. But it's a fascinating thing that Reb Meir, the Gemara says, Toichai achal kliposa zarak. He knew how to take a pomegranate and take out the seeds and all of, you know, the yellow parts, the shells and the husks that are bitter. Reb Meir knew how to discard. The Maharal in Nisivois Oilom Nisiv HaTorah says something very powerful. And that is what the Gemara means about Reb Meir is Toichai achal means that Reb Meir, in every halacha, he saw the Pnimius HaTorah. He saw the godliness of it. And therefore, Elisha ben Avuya's personality and mindset couldn't affect it. He says, most of us, when we learn Torah from a teacher, he said, the human frailties of the teacher will affect the Torah, and the Torah itself can become distorted through his mouth, and therefore I'm receiving a Torah that could be toxic, at least partially. He says, Reb Meir, Toichai Achal. Reb Meir, in the halacha, he grasped the pure godliness of it, the pure spiritual, internal, divine message of the halacha, which can't be distorted by Elisha ben Avuya. Toichai achal is a pshat in Torah. He learned toichias ha-Torah, the Medrash says in Reb Meir Sefer Torah, it said kosnas or with an aleph, not with an ayin. Or with an ayin is hide, or with an aleph is light. How could Reb Meir change his Sefer Torah? The pshat, of course, is, the Maggid says, in the or he saw or. In the skin, in the shell, he saw the light. And therefore, Reb Meir couldn't be distorted. Halacha Beis, says the Rambam, Ketzad Melamdin. How do you teach? What's the format? Harav Yoshev Bereish V'Talmidim Lefon of Mekofen Atara. The Rav sits at the head, and the students sit in front of him, surrounding him like a crown, basically like a circle, perhaps like a half circle. So that everybody should be able to see the Rebbe and to be able to hear his words. It's critical when you're learning to be able to see the teacher and hear the teacher. So therefore, they would sit in front of the Rav like a semicircle, a half circle. That's what we call it, like a crown. It was basically, he was a crown surrounding the Rav, but not surrounding him in a full circle because then some of them won't be able to see him. Fascinating. There can be a situation where the teacher sits on a seat, on a throne, or on a chair, and the students sit on the ground. Or everybody sits on the ground, the teacher and the students, or everybody sits on chairs, the teacher and the student. And where do we learn this from? Gemara Megillah Chaf Aleph, a fascinating source. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu Parshas Veschanan, Va'ata poi amoid imodi, Va'adabri lechis kol ha-mitzvah v'chukum v'mishpotim. Moshe says, Hashem told me after Matan Torah, you come and stand together with me and I'll teach you the whole Torah. Hashem is the Rebbe, Moshe is the student. And Hashem says, Amoid imodi, you stand together with me. What's the point? Obviously you'll be together with Hashem. He says, come to me, stand with me. From here we learn that a Rebbe and a student have to be on the same level. Either they're all on the ground, or they're all sitting on chairs. So if he's sitting on the chair, they should also be sitting on the chair. If he's sitting on the ground, then they can also sit on the ground. And the Rambam says, a fascinating piece of Jewish history, which is, I guess, part of Halacha. In the earlier parts of Jewish history, the system was that the Rebbe would sit, and the students would stand. Now, parentheses, we just said that it's disrespectful. So the Lechem Mishnah explains, no. It's disrespectful if he's sitting on a chair and they're sitting on the ground. Either they're all on the ground or all on the chair. But the fact that they're standing when they're learning is not disrespectful. And the fact that he's sitting is because he's teaching. He needs to concentrate, he needs to be relaxed, he needs to be serene. It's much easier for the Rebbe to sit and they're standing. That's not a problem. That would be a normal fashion. If they're both sitting and they're on the ground and he's on the chair, that would be inappropriate. This is like a Mishnah says. So in the beginning, they would all stand while he would sit. Then it changed. The Rambam says, before, the era before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, it all changed. The minig, the custom everywhere was that the Rebbe should teach the students and they're also sitting. Not only he's sitting, but they're also sitting. What does he mean with Mekoidim Churban Bayis Sheini? The source of this is a Gemara Maseches Megillah, that Reb Gamliel's days, everybody started to sit, also the students. And the reason was because of weakness. It was too hard for the students to stand for hours and hours and hours and concentrate and listen. They all had to sit. In fact, the Mishnah says at the end of Maseches Saita, Mishemeis Reb Gamliel Azakim Batal Kvod HaTorah. Where Reb Gamliel died, the glory of Torah was nullified. What does it mean, the glory of Torah was nullified? What happened? So the Rambam explains in Pirush HaMishnayos that they started to sit. Why doesn't the Rambam say where Reb Gamliel died? Why doesn't the Rambam say the days of Gamliel says before Churban Bayis Sheni? So Avodas HaMelech explains because there's two gerses, which Reb Gamliel? There were two major Reb Gamliels. There was Gamliel HaZoker, Reb Gamliel the Yavna. You had Hillel the Elder. Hillel had a son Shimon. He had a son Reb Gamliel, if you remember the introduction of the Rambam. He's called Reb Gamliel HaZoker. He lived a few decades before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. He had a son, Shimon, Reb Shimon ben Gamliel. He was killed by the Romans. He's one of the Asorah Gemalchus. Then he had a son, Reb Gamliel. He's known as Reb Gamliel the Yavna. He was the head of the Sanhedrin in Yavna. He's the one who had the policy that you don't let everybody into the Beis Medrash I spoke about. That's not Reb Gamliel HaZoker, it's Gamliel the Yavna. He lived after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. His father was murdered by the Romans. His Zayd was Reb Gamliel HaZoker. The Rambam obviously holds that this is a story about Reb Gamliel HaZoker, not Reb Gamliel the Yavna. So the Rambam says this happened before Churban Bayis Sheni, before the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash. Everything changed. The bodies became weaker. They simply could not stand anymore. And in that sense, batal kavod ha-Torah. Even though they sat days and nights and learned. But the fact that they weren't standing, they were sitting, is batal kavod ha-Torah. It could be also the Rambam says, Mekoidim Churban Bayis Sheni, because he wants to explain what happened. That as it was the fading years, as the decline was happening towards the destruction of the Bayis Sheni, this gives an explanation why it happened, that before Churban Bayis Sheni, things changed, and the students had to sit. And I think there's also a very deep halacha, and the halacha is, you're looking for success. You're looking for effectiveness. In other words, if I am stubborn and I say, no, everybody has to stand, everybody has to stand, but they're not going to be able to learn. But this is how they used to do it. You have to know when to alter things that will not alter the substance. They may just alter the packaging so that the ultimate message will be able to be communicated and your work will be effective. I think this is a very profound lesson in halacha. Of course, you always have to be careful what you're changing. Over here, they were changing something ultimately which is aesthetical, even though we do say, batal kavod ha-Torah, where Reb Gamliel HaZoker passed away. Halacha Gimel. If the teacher was teaching from his mouth to students directly, malamed, let it be so. Speak directly to them. But if he was teaching through an interpreter, through somebody who's a spokesman, in the days of the Gemara, they used to have often a metargim. A metargim was somebody who translated. Sometimes the Rav spoke in one language, let's say Lashon Kodesh, but the students didn't have such a good mastery of that language. So there was somebody who would translate the words of the Rebbe, or he would explain the words of the Rebbe, some basic explanation. Or conversely, if the Rebbe spoke low and the people would not be able to hear, and the Metargim had a loud booming voice, he served like an amplifier in days of old. Now here's an interesting thing immediately. The Ramah points out in Shulchan Aruch, Yerdei Simin Reish Mem Vav, the Lomos Damon Teder, that in Shulchan Aruch we don't have the halachas of a Metargim. And why? Because the Shulchan Aruch only wrote about halachas that were applicable in his day. Rabbi Yosef Karo lived in the 1500s. He's also the author of Kesef Mishnah on the Rambam, whose main mission was to show the sources of the Rambam in Gemara or Medrash. So Rabbi Yosef Karo and Shulchan Aruch wouldn't put in these halachas, but the Rambam follows his principle, and that is he wants to include all of Torah, all of the halachas, so he puts in the halachas of the Meturgaman. So the Rambam says, if he's teaching through a spokesman, then Hametargim Oymid Benayu Benay Talmidim. Then the translator, the interpreter, stands between the Rebbe and the students. Varav Oymid Hametargim Hametargim Hashmir L'chol Talmidim. The Rabbi, the teacher, says it to his spokesman, and he gives it over to all the students. Ukshein shaylin lematargim. And then when the students ask a question from the interpreter, who shayl rav, he brings the question to the teacher. Varav meshul lematargim, lematargim meshul l'shayl. And the rav doesn't skip over him. He speaks, he answers to the interpreter, and he gives it over to the question, the one who asked the question. The rav should never raise his voice louder than the voice of the Metargim. In other words, this is respect to the one who you chose to give over, to be your spokesman, to translate, to interpret. He shouldn't raise his voice louder than him. Often he couldn't, because the whole point why they had a metargim was in order for the voice to travel, because the Rav's voice was too hushed, it was too low. But sometimes, as I said, there were other purposes. He can translate into another language, he could give some basic explanation. When the metargim is speaking to the Rav, when he's asking a question, say from the student, he shouldn't raise his voice louder than the voice of the Rebbe. It should be the same voice because they are communicating to each other. The spokesman who's giving over the words to the students does not have permission not to diminish, not to detract from the words of the teacher, or to add, or to alter. You know, he may have some of his own ideas, right? You know what translators can do. I have to tell you, some years ago, I was asked to translate a particular speech that was being given in Yiddish, and I was asked to translate it into English, and I was sitting in an office, and I had headphones, and I was speaking into a mic, which was going to people's headsets, they had earphones, headsets, and they were listening. And the person said something, and I understood what he said, but I knew that if I translate that, nobody will understand a word he is saying. He's too abstract. So I don't know if I went into the classical definition of Rav Meturgamen because I was hired for that reason, but I actually, I presented something a little different to him, and he was in the spirit. And in the middle, in order to explain the idea, I said a joke. So suddenly, everybody who was listening to the English translation burst out laughing, and everybody else in the audience who was listening to the original didn't know why they did not get the joke. But the classic Meturgamen, don't take away from his words, don't add, and don't alter, don't change. Elim ken hoya turgamen aviv shel chacham rabbi. There's one exception. If the translator of the interpreter is the father of the sage or the Rebbe of the sage, then he can add, he can attract, he can alter. What if the teacher tells the interpreter, so my teacher told me, or so my father, my master told me, but he didn't mention the name. He said, my father, my teacher. Now, if the interpreter says over, so my father said, it's going to create confusion. When the translator says over the words to the people, He says it in the name of the sage. If the Rebbe said, my father said, or my Rebbe said, let him say the name of the father of the Rebbe. He explicitly mentions the name of the father of the teacher or of the teacher of the teacher. He says, Kach amar Rabbana Pliny. So said Rabbi so-and-so, Rabbana Pliny, Rabbi so-and-so. You said, don't add or alter the words of the teacher, and the teacher didn't mention the name. That is for a simple reason. It's forbidden for the teacher to call his Rebbe or his father by the name. That's why he didn't mention the name. He says, my father. He doesn't say the name of his father. My Rebbe, he doesn't say the name of the Rebbe. But the Metargim, who's not a child or a student, when he communicates it to the students, it's appropriate for it to be clear and concise, and everybody should understand the source of the material, and therefore he should mention the name. Here's another very interesting example. The Ravid argues here with the Rambam, and he says, the Rambam says, if the Turgaman is a father or a teacher, he could change. The Rambam says, this is a Dover Chadash, the Ravid, this is a Dover Chadash, when are you going to have this? It's a rare situation. Your father is going to be your translator, your Rebbe is going to be your translator. And the Kesef Mishnah right away puts there, he says, let's say it does never happens. It's very rare. For the Rambam doesn't make a difference. If it happens once in a Yovel, it happens once in 100 years. There's a halacha about it. He's allowed to change the words. He's allowed to add the words. He's allowed to detract. So the Rambam has to write it. Then the Kesef Mishnah says the Rambam actually took it from a Yerushalmi. Dalet. Harav shalimid. Halacha dalet. Harav shalimid v'lo yevinu hatalmid. A teacher taught, and the students didn't understand. Lo yichos aleihem. The Rebbe should never get angry at them. V'yirgas, and get upset. Let him repeat it, and review it, and explain it even many times until they understand the depth of what he's saying, the depth of the halacha. Now, conversely, the teacher should never get upset and angry that they don't understand. With patience, he must repeat it and repeat it and explain it till they get it. But conversely, a student should never say, "Hevanti, I got it, I understood." He did not understand the material. But he doesn't want to get the teacher upset. He doesn't want to make the teacher feel that he's a failure. He doesn't want to embarrass himself that he's incompetent. Do not do that. He should ask and repeat his question and ask the teacher to explain himself even numerous times. He already asked 3-4 times and the teacher explained 3-4 times and he didn't understand. Ask again. What happens if the teacher loses it? You know, teacher explained it 8 times. And the student still doesn't understand, and the student is being honest, and the teacher gets angry. He loses it, he gets upset. Yoimaloi. The student shouldn't back off, and the student shouldn't lie and say, I understood. You know what the student should do? He should say, Rebbe, my teacher, Torahi v'lilmad ani tzarech v'daitik tzarech. This is Torah. I have to learn. And my mind is not so broad. These are my faculties. Those are the words he says. Torahi, this is Torah. And of course, those words, Torahi, means you don't expect me to go out of the Beis Medrash. You don't expect me to give up. And you also know that you don't own it, just like I don't own it. Kesed Torah is for everybody. It's yours, but it's also mine. Torahi, and I have to learn. And you're my teacher. And Hashem gave you the mission to teach me, like we learned in Perek Aleph. Every chacham has a commandment to teach every student who wants to come learn. V'shinantam levanacha. Of course, as long as the student is behaving nicely, like we learned in Halacha Aleph. So I have to learn, and it's Torah. And Daitik Torah, you see, he says 3 things. First of all, it's Torah. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to all of us. I have to learn. And Daitik Torah, and it's hard for me to learn, so I need you to explain it. It's a beautiful story in Gemara Masechta Erevin, Daf Nun Dalet. There was a teacher named Rav Preda. He had a student, and the student would not understand the material if the teacher did not explain it 400 times. And this is what Rav Preda would do. And the Gemara says that once he was in the middle of teaching the student, and a delegation came into him, and they needed his help for a mitzvah, and Rav Preda said that he's soon going to finish, and then he's going to go and help them.
he was planning on finishing the 400 times and the student will understand and then he'll go. After 400 times, the student didn't understand. He says, what happened today? I explained it 400 times. The student said, I was anxious because I thought any moment you're going to be leaving. Since he heard the teacher tell them, I'm going to see you in a few minutes. So he already couldn't hear it. He couldn't absorb it. It's an incredible lesson. Right? Even though the teacher was there and he was fully attentive, but the student felt that any minute he could leave now, so he couldn't be fully present. And Reb Preid explained it another 400 times, and he got it. And ultimately, the Gemara says he got an offer that you can't refuse, either to live for 400 years or that he and his whole generation will get Olam Haba. He chose the latter, and Hashem said, give him both. But this is the uniqueness of that ultimate teacher. This is this one of the sources of the Rambam, how you have to behave towards your student. Hey, fascinating halach. Lo yiyal Talmud bush mechaveiriv shalamdu mepam nishayna yishniya. Ay, this is so relevant. A student should never be ashamed from his friends who mastered the material the first time or the second time. V'hu lo ilama delacha kamapam. And him, it took so many times to get. You want to naturally want to feel shame. And therefore, the next time around, after the second time, say, I understand. Because you don't want to be the one that they're going to be thinking about or pointing fingers. You know, he's the one who's slowing down the class. Do not be ashamed from your friends. You know why? Why not? Shame is bayish medover zeh. Because if you are ashamed in this area, nimtza nichnas v'yotze lebeis ha-medrash v'weinei lamed klum, you're going to be coming every day to the beis medrash and leaving the beis medrash without learning anything because of your sense of inner insecurity and shame. Therefore, the early sages told us, Ein habayshan lamed, the one who is ashamed will not learn. Ein habayshan lamed, a bashful person will not learn. V'lo yakapdan melamed, nor should the short-tempered teach. Kapdan is somebody who has a short temper. If you're a teacher, and when somebody doesn't understand once, twice, three times, you go into plots and get angry and scream at him and quit and denigrate him, you cannot be a malamed, you cannot be a teacher. So we have two conditions. The one who's learning, the student, must not be bashful. He has to be able to be honest with what he gets and what he does not get. And the teacher must have patience. When is this said? When the students did not understand the material for two reasons. Either because it was very deep, it was pasha deep, or because the student may have weaker intellectual and cognitive faculties. In other words, he's trying, he just can't. Then the teacher must have all the patience in the world, like we said with Reb Preid 400 times. What if the teacher sees that they're being lax, they're being lazy, they're just not being attentive? In other words, they're not putting in the effort. He's teaching, but they're not putting in the effort. It's not that the material is so deep or that they're struggling, but simply they're not applying themselves. That's why they didn't understand. Then he should display a certain upsetness or disappointment with them. Or lachliman bedvarim, he should challenge them with words, kedei lechadadan, in order to trigger them, in order to sharpen them. Or binyan zamru chachamim, about this the sages said in Maseches Ksuvos Daf Kuf Gimel, this was the famous, one of the last final will and testament of Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi to his son Rabbi Gamliel, who was Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi was a grandson of Rabbi Gamliel de Yavne, who was a grandson of Rabbi Gamliel Azokin, who was a grandson of Hillel. We mentioned earlier, so it's all connected. And he told his son, Zroik Mara B'Talmidim. Zroik Mara B'Talmidim means cast fear into the students. The students have to feel that this is a great moment in history and they should not be lax. L'fichach, therefore, it's inappropriate that a teacher should behave in a light-headed, very frivolous and uninhibited way in front of the students. He shouldn't be overly frivolous with them, you know, laugh with them and break down all the boundaries. He shouldn't eat and drink with them, so that his reverence will be on them. For one purpose, they should be able to learn with him and from him diligently. Their teacher must be very connected to the students. but you want a certain sense of awe and reverence and respect so that they should really feel the greatness of the moment and be able to be attentive and absorb the material. Halacha Vav. Ein shoylin es harav k'sheyikonis lebeis hamedesh ad shetisyashev daite alof. You don't ask questions to the Rebbe right when he walks into the Beis Medrash until he relaxes. He regains his composure. He's settled. Nor should the student ask a question right when he comes into the Beis Medrash until he sits down and relaxes. You want that the teacher should be able to respond to the question with full presence. Don't attack him with questions the moment he walked in. But the student also, don't walk in and right away start asking questions. You sit down, relax, so that you can articulate your question and think before you speak. Two students should not ask questions simultaneously. It's going to be confusing for the teacher. Don't ask the Rebbe about a different topic that he's not teaching. Famous Gemara Masechet Shabbos Dav Gimel, the opening of Masechet Shabbos. What happened? Rav asked Rebbe a question, and what did Reb Chiya tell him? Kad koi Rebbe b'hai Masechet lois shaylo Masechet Achriti. When Rebbe is teaching this Masechet, don't ask him in another Masechet. Ela me oisya inyan shein oiskim bai. Ask about the topic that they're dealing with. Don't start asking questions off topic. Some people have this innate tendency. They have to ask questions off topic. It's almost like, I don't know if it's part of the DNA, but they have to go off topic. Don't do that. Kadesh lo yisbayish. So that the teacher shouldn't be ashamed. He has not prepared that material. The teacher has permission to deceive the students through quizzes, in other words, through questions and things he does in front of them, which are actually wrong. These are, you know, catchy questions because he wants to sharpen their mind. And also to test their memory, if they remember what he taught them or not. And certainly he has permission to ask them about a different topic than the one they're dealing with in order to inspire them and arouse within them the willingness to review and remember and master the material. Halacha Zayin, Ein Shoyalin Mu'umad. You do not ask questions from the teacher when you're standing. He probably means, many mefarshim say, he means both. In other words, the teacher shouldn't be standing, and some say even the student shouldn't be standing. There's an argument in mefarshim. What does the Rambam mean? Does the Rambam mean that the student shouldn't be standing and the teacher shouldn't be standing? Or he means that the teacher shouldn't be standing? Ve'ein meshivin mu'umad. And you don't answer standing because the teacher, when he answers, should be sitting because the answer will come out in a more relaxed fashion. It's easier to communicate when you're sitting in a calm way. V'loy megavoya v'loy merachik. You don't ask a question from a high, elevated high place, meaning the teacher is in a low place and the student is in an elevated place, or conversely, and not from a far distance. You know, you scream out your question. That's not how you do it. And don't ask a question from behind the teachers, from behind the elders. You face him. You don't need him to turn around, which is disrespectful. And you only ask him a question in the topic that we're dealing with. The Kesef Mishnah says, he said that in Halacha Vav, you should only ask about the topic. So the Kesef Mishnah explains that earlier he was talking about, he's learning Hilcha Shabbos, and you start asking him a question in Tumah, or Tara, or Ribbis, or Kachim, a completely different Masechta, different Inyan. Here he's saying something else, and that is, Ancient of Ela B'Inyan, even in the topic that you're learning, ask about what he's talking about, not about another thing that is connected to the topic, but it's not part of the discussion. This is how the Kesef Mishnah explains it. Ve'ein shoyalin ela miyira. You ask with awe, with respect. V'lo yishal b'inyan yasa mishalosh halachas. Don't throw out more than three questions. It's too difficult. You ask one, two, three. Don't ask, you know, eight questions. You can ask later. In one topic, you throw out three questions simultaneously is enough. Ches, shnayim sheshalu. Two people ask the Rebbe a question, even if not simultaneously, but one after the other. He can't right now answer every question. He can answer one. Or he can answer both. But the question is,
what gets, which one does he give preference to? So the Rambam says this. Shal echad binyan, shal echad shalei binyan, iskak alinyan. If one asked on topic and one asked off topic, so he answers first the one on topic. Maise v'sheine maise. If one asked a question that's practical and one asked a question which is abstract, niskak alamaise. You first address the practical question. Halacha medrash. One asked a question about a halacha, a verdict in halacha, and one asked a question about a medrash. Medrash means the svarim that explain the psukim of Torah. And there could be halachas from that. But it's not a clear halacha. It's more an explanation of the psukim, like the svarim sifra, sifri, niskakan la halacha. You first address the one who asked about a clear, concise, established halacha. Medrash v'hagada. One asked medrash, one asked hagada. Medrash would be the medrashim that explain the psukim. Hagada are homiletical ideas. Different teachings of the sages, different stories, different narratives, which are part of Torah, like Medrash Rabbah, Tanchuma, Niskakan la Medrash. You first address the Medrash question. Haggadah v'kal v'chaymer. One asked a question in Agada. Again, these are the homiletic parts of Torah. And one asked a question of Kal v'chaymer. Kal v'chaymer is the first of the 13 methods that Moshe Rabbeinu gave the Jewish people of how to interpret the text of Torah known as Kal v'chaymer. Niskakin l'kal v'chaymer. You first address the one who asked about a Kal v'chaymer. He wants to understand the Kal v'chaymer. Kal means light. Chaymer means heavy. And it's basically the logic. If I tell you that somebody can pick up weights of 200 pounds, certainly he could pick up 50 pounds, right? Lahavdil, that's the logic of Kal v'chaymer. If he could pick up something heavy, if he's a heavyweight, certainly he could pick up something light, Kal. Kal v'chaymer or gzeir shavah. What if somebody's asking about the logic of Kal v'chaymer or gzeir shavah? Gzeir shavah is the second method of interpreting Torah. When you have two words that are used in different psukim or different halachas, we believe in the theory of copy-paste, which means the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam used the same word here and an identical word in a completely different mitzvah. It's a form of copy-paste, which means the laws of the first scenario will be applicable to some degree in the second scenario. Niskakin l'kal v'chaymer. You first address the question about a Kal v'chaymer, not a Gzeir HaShavah. The Pri Chodesh says, because Kal v'chaymer is pure logic, Gzeir HaShavah is something people usually received from their Rebbe, and therefore we're afraid that the Kal v'chaymer is easier to forget. What if the two people asking questions, one is a sage and one is a student? One is a sage who already was ordained, and one is a student who's learning. Niskakan l'chachem, you first address the sage out of respect. Talmud v'amaritz, niskakan l'talmud. One is a student and one is an amaritz. Amaritz is somebody who doesn't really learn. He's not very knowledgeable. He's very ignorant, but he came to ask a question. First, you address the student. Shneim chachamim, shneim talmidim, shneim amaritz. What if both are sages, or both are students, or both are ignorant? They're not involved in learning. So he says like this. So, if both people who are more or less equal in status asked about two halachas, or they asked two questions on the words of the Rebbe, or they're giving two different alternative answers to explain the Rebbe's words or answer his question, or they both asked about practical things. In other words, if one asked about a practical thing or an abstract thing, so we already know which one gets preference. But if both are the same status and they're asking two questions and there's no reason to give one preference to the other, so the Turgaman, the one who's the spokesman, he is the one who is responsible to present the questions and to communicate the answers, he can choose based on what he feels is the appropriate one to give preference to. It's so fascinating how the halacha orchestrates even such types of details. Two students come to ask a question. Who do you answer first? The question is not if you're going to answer both. You're going to answer everybody. But who do you answer first? Doesn't this tell us about the sensitivity of halacha, not only to the minutiae of life, but to the minutiae of communication, of how you communicate to a student? Halacha test, the last halacha. Ein yeshena bebeis hamedrash. No schluffing in the beis medrash. There's no sleeping in the beis medrash. V'chalam esnamna bebeis hamedrash. Somebody who dozes off. Chachmasei nase kroyim kroyim. His wisdom is torn into shreds, which means he does not get the full picture. And we all know this to be quite practical, right? In the middle of a shiur and you fall asleep and you missed the key connecting points. So you have a bunch of shreds, you have a bunch of torn rags, you don't have the full garment, you don't have the full picture. People think this is a curse. It's not a curse, it's a natural consequence. You slept through the main theme. V'chein amar Shlomo v'chachmaza. Shlomo said this in his wisdom. It's chachma. Ukroyim talbish numa. The one who dozes off is dressed with rags, which means his Torah is fragmented. In the Beis Medrash, you don't converse only words of Torah. Afilu mishen is atish, even somebody who sneezes, ein oimrin loy refuah. Don't say, zu gesund. Refuah means to your health. Today we say, gesundheit, zu gesund, labriyut. In the these days, they would say, refuah. The source of this comes from Pirkei de Rebbe Lezer. Rebbe Akiva Eiger brings it in Brachas Daf Nun Gimel. In the beginning of the history, people would not get sick, but rather at some point in life, they would exhale or sneeze and their soul would go back to its maker. It was Yaakov Avinu who we find to be the first person who's sick in Chumash. Nobody was sick before Yaakov. Yaakov Avinu asked Hashem, he said, I want to fall ill before I die so I could communicate with my children. And I can give them a tzava, and that's why today when somebody sneezes, we say it should be zu gesund, not chalila, the end of your physical journey. So he says, even this, saying refuah, which is not dvarim b'teilim, it's giving somebody a blessing, it's not appropriate to do it in the Beis Medrash. Ve'en tzarech lomar shar hadvarim. Certainly other words should not be spoken in the Beis Medrash. And the Rambam says, kedushas Beis HaMedrash, chamura mikdushas batei knesias. And the holiness of the Beis Medrash is even greater than the holiness of batei knesias. Batei Medrash was places where that were dedicated to learning. Batei knesias were places dedicated to davening. He says the kedusha of the Beis Medrash is greater than the kedusha of a Beis HaKnesses. So the Rambam tells us here there's no sleeping in the Beis Medrash, and the results of it are negative. I should just say that in Shulchan Aruch Erechayim Kufnon Aleph, he does say that you're allowed a shinas arai, which means a little temporary nap. However, other poskim say even shinas arai, which we see from the Rambam, even dozing off, even a nap is forbidden. However, in Hilchas Talmud Torah of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav Perek Dalet, he says that if somebody is learning day and night in Beis Medrash and forcing him to go to a home or another room to sleep outside of the Beis Medrash will cause bittul Torah, this person is allowed to sleep in the Beis Medrash. What about Sugazunt? So the Shach writes in Yeridei Simen Reish Mem Vav, the Sif Sekai and Hilchas Talmud Torah, in the name of the Prisha, that in these days they would not lift up their eyes from the Svarim, and therefore they should not say Sugazunt. Certainly they would not have conversations. But now, people are not so careful anyway, they could say Refuah Tzugazunt. However, the Taz says that one should not be lenient when it comes to this halacha. One has to be extremely careful about the nature of conversations that one has in the Beis Medrash. It's a place to speak divrei Torah, words of Torah. One should, of course, be careful what they say anywhere. We discussed this in Hilchas Deis, but here the Rambam is discussing the halachas in the Beis HaMedrash and Hilchas Talmud Torah.